Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming out to Busted tonight. I think this is the main session that everyone at Dragon Con should have to attend Dragon Con. It would help out a lot to folks during and after. Yeah. I've got a warrant for everybody's room parties here, just so you know. But we'll introduce ourselves, and we'll say a few things, and then we'll turn it open to questions. My name is Andrew Greenberg. Well, I'm here primarily as a game designer and the like. I am also on the board of Georgia Normal. Take care, Carol. The Georgia National branch of the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. I work on showing this as part of board duties to folks. I also have a convention coming up not related to being busted. It is the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo for anyone interested in game design, computer game design, and so forth. October 1st to 3rd, get flyers from me, and I'll turn it over to my left.
Hi.
Yeah, if you would.
My name's Cara Mikus. I'm a litigation specialist. I currently reside out in Denver, Colorado. I've known Andrew so long, it's frightening, which is why we can sit up here together and make fun of this wonderfully informative film. And both of us are here to address the issues in it and helpfully teach you how to protect yourself and how to protect the others around you from stupid searches and seizures. I can't say illegal because it's such a gray area now, but hopefully teach you a little bit more about that.
Yeah, and the main thing that I like to say about this movie is that not everything in here will keep you from being arrested. Being arrested will ruin your day, your weekend, your month, but being convicted will ruin your life. And the information in here can go a long way towards keeping you from being convicted. And that is more important than not being arrested. I think it'll help you from being arrested. It really serves to keep a conviction from happening. The one thing that I mentioned during this that has changed since the movie, if police ask for your ID, the Supreme Court has ruled that if state law requires you to do so, then not doing so violates state law. So the cops can ask for it. In Georgia, if police ask you to identify yourself, you have to positively identify yourself. Doesn't necessarily say getting your ID. A lot of folks don't have ID. But you have to positively identify yourself, and usually we think of that as handing over an ID. And I'm good on that. If you have anything to say, we'll turn open to questions.
I think the only thing that I would say here is that over the last few years, as I have learned a lot more about this through working with the Busted panel and everything here, one of the things that has become apparently clear is that people do not understand what is required in terms of coming into your home versus getting you in a vehicle. And I think the largest difference is that the amendment was written in response to warrant provisions, you know, back when they were writing the amendments in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all of that. They had an idea that the expectation of your residence was private, that you were the king of your castle, and this came over from English legislature. So while your residence may be private, and while you may be able to establish that right of privacy with greater clarity at the door, your vehicle out on public roads is not under the same provisions.
All right. We don't want you to talk. You're on. Yeah, you're involved with this stuff.
Yeah, I should know what I'm doing, right? I'm a licensed professional. Now, what about the castle doctrine as related to self-defense, that you do not have to retreat from your home, and they've extended that to the car? Is there the possibility of also making the car essentially your home? Like, for instance, you do not have to retreat. It used to be if somebody threatened you and tried to carjack you, you were expected to retreat. Now you don't have to.
I don't know that I've actually read anything to that specific point. I do know that the federal courts looked at it with a reduced expectation to privacy because vehicles are not serving as your primary residence or anything along those lines. They're hoping that you're not living in your car, therefore they're not establishing that. So
there's been some state legislation on that, I think especially Texas, and I don't think anyone's particularly challenged it. So I think it's kind of more, again, state doctrine as opposed to federal. And I don't know of that being the case in Georgia, though, so I'm not going to necessarily blast anyone when it comes on in my car.
Okay, I have two comments. One is about the car thing that my understanding, I'm a high school teacher, and I actually teach civics.
Excellent.
Yes, I do.
I'm sorry I was asleep. I'm sorry I slept through your class. I was stoned.
And my understanding of what the problem is with your car in terms of the Supreme Court is that your car basically moves. And so that the, you know, in your home, they can always come back and get a warrant, but a car is mobile, so therefore they sort of balance the your reasonable expectation of privacy with the fact that a car is not always going to be there when they come back. So sort of that's the other thing that I wanted to say, because I'm from New York City, is that it's, I don't know if it's reached the papers nationally, but we have this horrible policy really since Mayor Giuliani of the stop and frisk, what they call stop and frisk, and that is where they just stop mostly young men of color in the street and search them, and knowing that the search is illegal, just take stuff from them and put their name in the database and run their names and do all this kind of stuff. And there was a to-do a few months, because they wanted to, about wanting to maintain this database of names, even after all these cases were dismissed, thrown out, or never, really never took place, because the, all these searches are illegal. And, but they wanted to keep the names on file of the people that they stopped, and so, but it's really a horrible kind of thing, but they've been doing it for several years and pretty much getting away with it, because they don't, most of them don't, most of these stops and frisks do not lead to an arrest.
And
because it, I mean, it's because it's clearly illegal. So
right, and anything they got to be thrown out.
Anyway.
And it's getting even bigger with the database issue with DNA. I mean, there is a DNA database being compiled, and folks who are in the military have theirs in it, and they already know that they've given up, same with fingerprints and the like. So the whole issue of your information being kept after you haven't been convicted of anything is a mounting concern. ACLU has been one of the groups fighting this, and nothing's really been decided yet on getting rid of that data once the police have gotten it. And again, this is something which really should be governed by state law. State law should say that if you're not convicted, this information has to be flushed from records, but state law doesn't.
Hi. I had a question regarding language. I'm very apologetic, I suppose, at any time. I don't wish to offend someone, so I would say, instead of saying, I do not consent to a search, I would preface it with, I'm sorry, officer, I don't consent this. Would the I'm sorry be any form of, you know, acceptance of guilt, or is it just me being polite?
Part of this comes out in how you're responding to the police officer. The important thing is that you affirmatively assert your right. And this is something I don't like that the Supreme Court's been coming down with recently, but it has been, that people have to affirmatively assert that they've got a right to be to remain silent, that just remaining silent is not asserting your right.
How do you affirm silence?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that is what the Supreme Court is saying.
They
you have
expect
to positively
you to know.
You have to positively assert your rights in order to maintain them. Otherwise, you can still be waiving them, essentially. So I would be, you do want to be careful in what you are saying to the cops, so it is very clear. That's why the phrase that I kind of prefer is, I don't consent to any searches of myself, my car, anything else. But just saying, I don't consent to any searches is blanket, covers everything, and is safe. You'll see him in the movie being very courteous to the police officer, and I don't think that Glasser would say, I'm sorry, but be careful how you respond to the cops, so there's no way they can consider you to not be positively asserting your rights.
I'm kind of nervous, so if you'll bear with me.
You got something to hide, boy?
I'd like to make a couple of... if I could, I'd like to make a couple of comments. Everything I'm about to say, I don't know if it what state applies to who, so I advise you to look up your own information. But as far as I know, the whole thing about the car and being searched is completely irrelevant, because the thing about being born into this world is there are all kinds of hidden contracts that you sign yourself up for. For example, you think you have rights because it's your personal vehicle, although it isn't, and if you want to know why, it's because it's registered, right? It's registered as a state. Basically, the way it works is anytime you sign most contracts, you are bringing yourself into what's called admiralty jurisdiction. And the way that works is you're giving away certain freedoms in exchange for privileges, and basically like spending currency, things like that. So I think that some people who have houses I don't know how sovereign citizens work, but I believe that houses aren't really, they can't just come in and search you if you have a house. But if you're on a public road and you're in a state registered vehicle, they pretty much don't need a reason. I mean, they need a reason, but they can use any kind of reason they want to search your car.
Well,
and,
this is
like I said, you can look up. I'm just getting into it, so I don't really know much about it, but as far as I know, that's how it works. Right.
Well, again, this goes back to exactly what I said before. This information won't necessarily keep you from getting arrested. Cops can poke their noses in, but what will happen is that your lawyer can do exactly what they said in here, introduce a motion to suppress the evidence as illegally gathered and get that evidence thrown out. And once the weed's thrown out, once if you're into fetish lifestyle and they grab your play bag and call it a rape kit, once that's thrown out, you're in a much better situation if there's no evidence. One of the other things about driving, I can't believe that the doctrine has slipped my mind, the name of the doctrine. Georgia law, when you drive, when you have a driver's license, I can't remember the name of the doctrine. Implied consent, yes. You have implied that you consent for the police to search you for booze. They can breathalyze you, take a blood test, etc. That has been challenged up to the Supreme Court. I think it can. There's enough reasons for it to be challenged again. I think that's a pretty grossly broad reading of government powers to be allowed to go ahead and take blood, take a breathalyzer on you just because you're driving.
Implied consent has actually become fairly well used throughout the United States. I don't know to what extent exactly, but while it may have been challenged, I don't believe that in many cases it's been overridden.
No, it hasn't, but it should be. It's such a, yeah, take blood, take breath, however, to go ahead with it. And so that, take to the hospital,
okay,
take blood. Oh, yeah. No, the cop's just not going to pull a scalpel and start to... Unless he's twinkling in his daylight.
All right. I have a question. If you are hosting a party or gathering, where is the line drawn in terms of what belongs to you, the homeowner, and what belongs to your guests?
At your front door. Everything on your property is technically you can be charged for at your front door because it is on your property. Your guests may have brought it. You may not have bought that quarter pound of cocaine. However,
hey, buddy.
However, because it's on your property, they can technically turn around and charge you for it. You are responsible for what takes place on your property.
And I mean, again, it comes down to being convicted. Can you prove that you didn't know about it? You had that your fingerprints are not whatever, but you have given up a level of defense. One of the important things about Busted, what this movie shows you, is setting up multiple layers of defense for yourself. So that not all of these have to stand for you, but if one does, you can suppress enough to have a conviction to be found innocent or to have a conviction overturned or whatever. The cops have to beat down every single one of these.
Three very quick points. First, if that person who brought in stuff without your knowledge was a government informant or a cop informant, and you can show that, does that matter in court? Number two, OSHA can come into your place of business and look around without a warrant or probable cause or anything. What power does that come from? And three, if a cop does abuse your rights, but not, you know, to the point where you can do anything about it. I mean, like, what is the point where you can actually do something that would actually affect his job or something? Because it seems like they can do whatever they want, and the most you can do is have it thrown out of court. So they don't really have any incentive to not push the envelope.
Right. Let's work backwards on that then. We'll start with the what can you do point of view. Again, first of all, the most important thing is to not be convicted. If you're a student, if you're in a drug offense, you can lose your student loans. It makes getting employed in anything much more difficult. If you're going to be a professional, you're licensed, it becomes much more difficult, et cetera. So the idea is to, I forgot where I was going with that. Wow, I need a drink more.
Okay, with respect to was it like somebody with a plant, who was a plant, DEA agents and that kind of thing, that area is still very, very gray. I'm sure that it can be established probably very quickly. However, I will say that I am not a criminal expert by any stretch. So they have a lot of ability to come in and...
Go
Drop stuff off, try to plant things, but I think you have to be a willing recipient. I don't think somebody can just necessarily walk into your home, be a DEA plant, and be like, I've got it, here it is, and now you're busted.
But the issue is, again, proving you didn't know it, whatever, and you want to set up as many different barriers as you can.
My question is, why would a DEA agent be interested in coming to your house to plant stuff? What were you involved, or who were you hanging around with that would get their attention to begin with?
No, you're taking it to a false level with that. What is that called? A false logic. Because often it's just to get a conviction. It's to get another easy bust. Why did the Red Dogs charge into an old lady's home and shoot her in Atlanta? That's the perfect example.
Well, that was actually, they got the wrong address. Mm-hmm.
They made the whole thing up to begin with.
Yeah, but it wasn't like they were walking down the street and said, oh, that's a nice house, let's break into that one. In other words, if you are thinking from the point of view that they're coming after you personally,
trust the cops to make
No, never trust the cops. Never.
The cops have a budget, and they only have so many overtime hours, and they have to actually justify where they're.
Yeah, but if you want to, if they make a mistake, there's your first reason why the guy could drop it off.
They make a mistake, that happens.
And the other thing is, the other point is that these are, more importantly, your rights to defend above and beyond anything else. So just because you gave them any sort of suspicion doesn't mean there's any less level of, I know you believe that, but I appreciate the lead-in, doesn't give you any less reason to be asserting these rights. Everybody has a duty to assert these rights. If they're not asserted, that's when you risk losing them.
Yeah, for instance, if he comes in and you notice he's got something, they say, out now. And you've got everybody in your party there says, hey, you saw it, you told me to get the hell out. Okay, that's witnesses saying, you do not consent to that being there, that's not yours. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
as opposed to you say nothing, and you know it's there, you're in trouble.
But I mean, all of it comes down to court.
If they're actually out to get you, you're screwed.
And again, you want to set up barriers. They can arrest you. You want to keep from being convicted. The OSHA issue, again, remember, that is only for firms of a certain size. That doesn't kick in, like, for my company, 5 people. So,
but where did that
call
come from? I mean,
yeah. No, that's federal. This is federal at that point. When you are, I don't know if it comes from your business license at that point or where it is, but you do have a lot of... Yeah, I guess it is. I'm not exactly sure where that one comes from. I'm not sure. I'll have to find out.
I doubt they're going to pop an OSHA inspection on your at-home business.
No, you have to be a certain size, and it's not 5 people. It's like 15 or something like that, certain revenue numbers, all that kind of stuff.
They have a budget also.
Yeah. And my God, their budget's a lot more limited than the DEA budget, so I'm not sure what clause that's allowed in, but yeah.
I want to discuss this gentleman's question, but I want to apply it to your car.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So the same question, but just focusing it on one's car, one's vehicle. What can you do to stop somebody from riding with you, or say someone is riding with you and they have something that you don't know about, and then they pull you over, and then you get in trouble because you didn't know about it, or you asked them before they get in your car and they lied to you.
Don't even think about the person who's riding with you. Think about the person who owned it before you. Perfect example, this friend of mine, Bill Bridges, who was the warehouse developer at White Wolf, when he was moving down to Georgia, was driving a VW he just bought, comes on a roadblock, and he's realizing he has no idea what might be in this car he has. And you could own the car for years and not know what's in it. So you want to assert these things whether you think someone in the car has stuff with you or not. If someone has stuff in the car and they're busted with it, again, you've got a much higher level of defense if they arrest you as well. The stuff was in his pocket. I didn't know anything about it, even though I was carrying her tampons, whatever. You are setting up barriers again. It was a hitchhiker I picked up. I didn't know what they were carrying, etc.
In general, without probable cause, they are not going to search the passengers of your vehicle. They may search you, they may search the vehicle, but once they start to assert the searching of your passengers, then they are getting into a more gray area. So whatever your passenger may have on his person is generally going to not fall through on you, because in general they're not going to be searching these people unless they've given them some reason to think that, well, he's a danger for A, B, or C, and they'll create it. So, but in general, that's established.
You've got to assert these rights whether your passenger is the Pope or Cheech and Chong. Yeah. So.
Yeah. One thing I noticed in the video is that he just told this passenger, say nothing, let me handle it. How many of your passengers are that cool? They run down the street, you know, and then you're in trouble.
If not, so, they shouldn't be a passenger.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's an old saying, if you run with dogs, you get fleas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but who you hang out with. You don't know what they might have had left on them and so on and so forth.
Rock video and this stuff.
But if you know your friend's a doper,
why, this why is my friend? Wait, I didn't say that. I forget. We get the feds at these sessions. What am I thinking? Where's the mic?
I've got a question.
Well, it's over here. We're going with the mic.
Recently, there's been a couple of cases where people have gotten into trouble videotaping police as they were doing public traffic stops. What is the law on that? If I get stopped, am I allowed to tape it as evidence, or do I have to turn the camera off?
This is getting nasty because states are actually passing laws against you videotaping police, which is such utter bullshit.
Well, I'm truly sorry. It happened just in Denver 2 weeks ago. There was a huge thing on the news where some guy got the crap beaten out of him walking his dogs. I don't know the circumstances behind it, so I'll not speak to that at all. All I can say is someone did catch it on film, and it has become a national issue now where this guy is showing that he is being violently abused by these police officers. So, you know, it's just getting ugly everywhere. Yeah, they're going to do everything to protect it. If you're going to do it, be quiet about it.
Well, right now, if things happen in public, you have every right to film it, videotape it, record it in every way. If it's in a public place, you have every right to do that. Now, some states are passing these laws, so I don't know how these are going to wash out through the courts.
That's not necessarily true. There are a couple of exceptions, like if you're filming near an airport or filming near a government security
complex. Right.
Hey, what about audio recordings?
Audio is fully allowed in public places. Okay, in public places, pretty much any audio in public places. If it's private, one of the participants has to know that it's happening. Some states, all participants have to know.
Yeah, I was talking to him yesterday about this very issue, and he said he'll be here panel.
Good guy,
right?
Mm-hmm.
About talking to the police. And he's a sheriff here.
Oh, he's a sheriff now.
I'm pretty sure.
Cool.
Right.
Anyway, deputy sheriff.
He used to be deputy sheriff before. If he's a sheriff, that's awesome. Take more sheriffs like him.
People want to, you know, they see something happening, they run right over it with their video camera. Well, the problem is you're now a physical threat to the officer. He can't pay attention to them and to you. You're now a threat. So walk across the street. If you're outside of the physical zone where he feels in danger, they're generally not going to pay any attention to you. So if you stand across the street and do that, they're going to be a lot less paranoid.
Plus, you'll get a wider pan on the camera, catch the whole thing.
Okay, this is pertaining to the whole passengers thing. I personally got arrested being a passenger in the car. And, like, what was it? There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and their excuse was I look nervous. So
no, that's, yeah.
What can I do in an event like that, or at least to protect my passengers in case something like that ever happens again?
Yeah, you look nervous is not reasonable cause.
Yeah, but...
So did you, I mean, did they, if they found something, you then throw it? Well, the other thing is, again, you now have to affirmatively assert your rights. You have to say, I don't consent to a search, if that's what they're then going to do.
Well, that was my fault, because like I asked him how I look nervous. He said, you look nervous, get out of the car right now.
And you get out of the car if he tells you to get out of the car. If he tells you to roll down the window, roll down the window. If they ask, anytime a cop asks you something, then a cop, 99% of the time, isn't sure he's got the right to do it. If they ask to look in your car, they probably don't have probable cause. If they go look in your car, assert your right, you gotta say it, but don't block them from doing it.
And that's a funny sticking point, because the majority of the police that you deal with, while they might know the statutes to charge you for, don't understand the law as it protects you. So you need to be busy on that.
Yeah, they understand the rules and regulations of what they do and how they do it. So just make sure you affirmatively assert yourself on these.
In a DUI circumstance, do you have to consent to a breathalyzer, urine, or blood, or is it in your best interest to do so?
That's what we were just talking about at the beginning. This was implied consent law. In Georgia, the law is that if you have a driver's license, you have implied to everyone that you consent to those kinds of searches at the policeman's request. So I still think there's enough room for that. Went up again to the Georgia Supreme Court. It could get knocked down, but it has been upheld through the Georgia court so far. So right now, but the penalty for not doing it is losing your license for a year, which in many cases might be better than giving up your rights. So you decide you will be breaking the law by not consenting to a test, and then to what degree they then go to try and force you to a test is their business.
Well, I heard that like if they say they're going to give you a breathalyzer test, you could say, no, I'd rather have a blood test. Is that true?
I've been told that too, and I've been told that by police officers. I haven't read the regs on
that.
And
is that a smart thing to do?
You absolutely can, and generally, statewide, and I don't know specifically Georgia law, but there's a certain amount of time that they'll have from the period of time that you're pulled over to get you to wherever they are going to administer some blood tests. There is case law on the books where they have failed to get people to the hospital within that prescribed amount of time. The DUI has been thrown out. So
yeah, that's an important point, especially in Atlanta on a Saturday night. Emergency rooms tend to be busy. Getting a place to take blood tends to be a hassle. Let me make one quick point. She brings up a very important point about timing on these things. One of the issues that comes up a lot is the dogs. We're going to bring the dogs to search your car, et cetera, et cetera. There's no definitive law on this, but so far, the way that's been upheld in the general way that police operate on this is that they can only detain you for the length of time that a normal traffic stop would take. So if they're going to pull you over and then say we're going to bring the dogs out here and you wait for 2 hours for the dogs, that's going outside of this time limit. And this is going to be an unreasonable search at this point. You keep saying, am I free to go? Am I free to go? Asserting your rights to be out of there. Again, and then you argue that they didn't have probable cause to bring the dogs in the first place. There's no set time limit. It's not like
you
55 minutes, 3 seconds.
Good
yeah,
defense
you
defense attorney.
You're going to get arrested.
Right. I work with a lawyer named Dave Clark, another name Winston Getz here in town, who are also with Georgia Normal, and they say that they have never lost a driving while under the influence of weed case when the people have asserted their rights to not be searched. They say they've won these 100% of the time. So, again, get a good lawyer and let them get it thrown out. Let's go with the microphone so they can keep it. You keep it on tape or? All right, let's keep it on the mic.
My question is, if you're involved in a traffic stop and the police are arresting you for some reason, if you're already being arrested, do they not have the right to search your
yes,
car
they
after
do.
Arresting you?
That was in the movie.
So, well, yeah, in the movie,
right.
When he says, I could arrest you for going 20 over the speed limit.
Yes, he
if
could.
If he chose to arrest them, he could then search the car.
Yes, he could. But how many people get arrested for going 20 miles over? Now, we've got this bizarre super speeder law in Georgia, and they're still not arresting you. They got even more reason not to arrest you going for 25 over because they want to ticket the next super speeder for the $400. So I do know people have been arrested for really stupid traffic stuff because in Georgia, the law is even more fucked up in that we don't have these little citations. We only have two levels. We only have misdemeanors and felonies, and any misdemeanor can be met with a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. That means speeding 5 miles over can, theoretically, doesn't happen, can get you a $1,000 fine and a year in jail.
If I can speak to that real quick, that law actually has just changed. There's no longer automatic search incident to arrest on your vehicle. For anything.
For what?
Supreme Court just changed it.
Which case are you talking about? We'll give the background on it.
It's in Arizona. Basically, once you have been arrested and secured and you're no longer out and about your vehicle, there is no automatic reason to search your vehicle anymore. Now, there's ways to get around that. They can tow it and do an impound search and stuff like that. But
are you talking about the one where if it's not related to why they were arresting you?
No.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one. I have to look that one up.
No, it just changed. I can't remember the name of the case off the top of my head. It came out of Arizona.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one. Thanks. Anyone here have any technological ability?
Cell phone. Going back to the blood test in instead of the breathalyzer. Now, you mentioned a time frame. Mm-hmm. First, what is the time frame, and does it vary between states? And second, is the reason that they have this time frame is because you might sober up between the time? I don't know how chemistry works with alcohol and blood.
It gets very complicated. In Colorado, it's 2 hours. I don't know what it is in Georgia. Body chemistry does some very strange things during a certain window of time. You're going to consume without actually consuming. Your blood is going to take in more of the alcohol that you have consumed over a certain period of time and then start to process it, which is why they generally try to hold it within that 2 hour window, because after a little bit longer, clearly you start to sober up. So, you know, they want to hold you within that. And it's not like they can pull you over, and you know, 8 hours prior and then be like, well, you had a drink 10 hours ago. I want to see that. They kind of lose their ability there. So, and everybody's chemical processes work differently. Every defense attorney will tell you that it has to be all done differently.
Right, right. And the issue often on the blood test versus breathalyzer is that breathalyzers do have a higher rate of false negatives and positives than does blood test. Blood test is considered a more reliable test.
Is it a good way to get it thrown out of court or something? If you do go opt for the blood instead and you hope that you can sober up, is it a good chance your case can get thrown out?
You can hope.
I'm not advocating drug driving.
You might be hoping that something will go wrong procedurally, and perhaps it will. I will tell you that, as he just mentioned, the breathalyzers generally have a higher rate of failure. They are more arguable in court. If you do end up getting the blood test done, they manage to get everything done correctly procedurally, you have less to argue and less to actually maybe get thrown out. So,
yeah.
So even if you weren't drinking at all and they do a breathalyzer, it could blow positive?
Oh, yeah, and there have been instances of that.
I think antacids will even make you blow positive.
If you're diabetic and going through the rest.
Yeah, there are all sorts of things that'll do that. So,
bread,
if you just eat bread. It'll fermentation. And I mean, the other idea is the cops have been accused of having throwaway breathalyzers, like they have throwaway guns.
Yeah,
bags of pot.
Originally from Tampa, real good friends with David G, the sheriff of Hillsborough County, and some folks, and this is kind of common as we're hanging around sometimes, drinking beer and talking and chit-chat about, okay, so what happens if you get, pulled over for the breathalyzer? And the common question is for that I've asked and gotten answers back from several sheriffs is you need to decide how much your license is worth to you. Obviously, if you're in a job like you're a delivery driver or you're in a professional job, like I happen to work for a major corporation, and if you get a DUI, you're pretty much fired. They're going to fire you because it's a public embarrassment of the company. So the question is how much is your license worth? And he goes, if you can afford to, take a cab for a year, take public transportation, refuse the test, you're going to lose your license, but it's not a conviction for DUI. He goes, so it's not going to go on your record as a DUI conviction. It's going to go on there for you refuse the test, and you may get to keep your job. It may be a little more difficult. The other option that I've asked is, okay, so I consent to the test. What are my options? And I haven't found a single sheriff in Hillsborough County that said, I would take the breathalyzer test. They all said we would refuse and request to go to the hospital and request to take the blood test. They don't feel that the breathalyzer is an accurate test. And I've heard that numerous times, both from those and a couple of my friends here in the Atlanta PD, is that they don't consider the breathalyzer to be accurate.
Right. And there's another issue, which is that the more barriers you raise to the cop, the less likely they are to go ahead and push things. If they can say, if maybe you are sober enough to say, hey, I don't consider your breathalyzer is legit, give me a blood test, this is, you're turning into a hassle. They're going to have a long night of processing you. They'd rather be doing other stuff. So
you can actually say, no, I won't take a breathalyzer, but I'll do a blood test. You can actually say that?
I've in Colorado, and I've been told that here, but I've not actually seen the regs.
You consent to a search. You consent to one of the tests. But which one of those tests, you're not refusing, you're asking for a specific test, and they have to right. I guess, do that obligation. You
might want to ask James about that one.
To be clear, there's no option of no consent.
There is an option. The option means in Georgia, you lose your license for a year.
Okay.
That's the option.
But it's not a DUI conviction.
But it's not a DUI conviction.
Right.
You mean get out of the car and walk around? Yeah, that's another gray area. I mean, you are kind of in that case. The whole issue in this is more the, am I testifying against myself?
Yeah.
And at that point, you're on a public road, and I think that's where they assert that?
I mean, it's questionable. I mean, theoretically, you can say no, and then they'll go ahead and push it and say, well, you got to do the blood test. In other words, I don't know Georgia law specifically on that. I don't think you're required to get out and walk the line, touch your nose, et cetera, but you are required to, you have implied that you consent to being searched on the alcohol issue.
And unless you're in Germany and they make you do that test that Steve Martin did in The Man with Two Brains where he had to walk on his hands and juggle.
That'd be awesome.
And we all do that.
I can juggle, so.
All right, we're wrapping this up. Let's finish up with your question.
You have to give them your car keys. Like, if you can stay in the car, you've locked your car. And they
if they,
you,
if a they police say, officer demands something from you, I never recommend refusing their demand. If they ask for it, I would say no in every search, in every circumstance.
Then later they could say, look at the tape. He gave me his car keys. He obviously consented.
And you keep saying, if it's on tape, it's all, well, we hope it, there's audio too. You're saying, I don't consent to any searches. If they demand you, roll down the window, give me your keys, whatever, I never recommend resisting what an officer is telling you to do.
I have been told that if you don't feel like if you're in a very bad neighborhood or if you're just
go somewhere public lit, go to a gas station, do it in public.
Thank you. But you have to show that you're signaling all that, show that you're slowing down, show that you are eventually going to pull over when you feel safe. I have heard that some people will that cop is just being an a-hole or got confused, and he'll call in all of his little buddies and they'll all chase you at 2 miles per hour. Does that happen a lot, or is he just?
I don't hear of it happening a lot. Theoretically, that can happen until you pull over. But at this point, with all the crap that has happened, and there are legitimate fears of people imitating police officers. What the hell is that called? Oh, well, of pretending to be police officers. I think the police are the ones who recommend this now. So,
yeah, and generally, I mean, if you're a single female out about sober and on your way somewhere, you can certainly say to them, hey, I wasn't stopping in that neighborhood, and I certainly wasn't going to stop for just you because I wanted another officer. You're always now allowed to request another officer simply by rolling down your window just a tiny bit and saying, I am not comfortable with you alone. Can you request another officer? Women on their own now are allowed to do this. I don't know about smaller men. If
I'd go to a public place with a carload of guys. Personally, I want folks videotaping it. I think we're out of time, Scott. We got one more?
Yeah, we're out.
All right, thank you all very much. This is on YouTube. Look for Busted. Show it to all your friends. They need to see it.